Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another mini episode of the FDA Lounge. We have a great mini episode for you today. We're going to be breaking down the Final Four for 2017, as well as WrestleMania 33 with one of our great recurring guests over the years, Evan Roberts of WFAN in New York. He will be joining us shortly for this conversation. And so much to get into on both topics. A Final Four that really, really kind of defied expectations here. This was a year when people were expecting a lot of chalk in there, myself included, and it really didn't turn out to be that way, albeit for a Final Four with two number one seeds. But the two number one seeds that made it may have been potentially the least regarded among them. I would guess out of all the bracket pools out there, they were probably number three and number four in whatever order as far as number one seeds picked to be there, Gonzaga and North Carolina. But there they are, along with two surprise teams, Oregon, because of the injury to their big man, Boucher, and also South Carolina, who really came out of nowhere in the East region. So we have that to get to. Also, WrestleMania 33. I see we have our guest on the line here. So just to reset everyone, welcome to the FDH Lounge. FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with you today. We are here with one of our favorite recurring guests, Evan Roberts of WFAN in New York, currently doing middays and has been for a long time, batting cleanup, if you will, at the Yankee Stadium of Sports Talk Radio, WFAN, along with our friend Joe Benigno, who I say that so much sarcastically as Joe's previous appearance on the show, a little bit heated, as it can be sometimes with him. We've had Evan on any number of times. We are here with him today to discuss the 2017 Final Four. We are here with him today to discuss WrestleMania 33. So much going on, and one of our favorite guests to break it all down with, Evan Roberts of WFAN in New York. Evan, good to have you back on the show, my man. How are you today?
Good to be here. Should I try to make it heated like Benigno was the time he came on?
Well, if you got any hot takes about how the Cavs are in trouble right now, that might get the job done. You got any?
No, you guys are going to cruise through the East. Don't be fooled by March. Don't be fooled by February. I mean, I think people need something to talk about. The Celtics aren't beating the Cavs. The Wizards aren't beating the Cavs. The Raptors aren't beating the Cavs. Now, you'll get smoked in the finals. I mean, you know that, but you'll cruise through the East. You got nothing to worry about.
Just like last year, right, Evan? Just like last year when this team was down 3-1. No chance at all.
Very different. It's very different, and you know it, baby.
I know it's very different. Golden State doesn't have nearly the chemistry in there with Curry and Durant this year. So,
Look, it's always possible that Draymond Green does something incredibly stupid that costs his team a game and subsequently a series. By the time the Warriors get to that finals, in fact, okay, here it is. You will win a game in the NBA finals, a game, one solitary game. The Warriors will beat you in five. Don't be fooled by their regular season. And don't be fooled by their lack of chemistry.
I think it's a coin flip. I still think it could go either way. I'm not overconfident, but nor do I think it's a done deal either. We've seen this team flip the switch, and the depth that they have now, you've got to be sitting there as a Nets fan looking there. You've got to be somewhat impressed with pickups like Darren Williams coming here to chase the ring.
Oh, my God. That is the biggest reason why I want you guys to flop. Like, I like the Cavs. I have nothing against you. But when you pick up a gutless, because that's what he was, completely gutless player like Darren Williams, you deserve to lose because of him.
Well, and how's this for a transitional point here? Well, we can sit here and say with almost certitude at this point what the NBA finals are expected to be. You certainly can't say that about the college equivalent of this, the Final Four. A year that was looking to be very, very chalk-tastic in the minds of a lot of people as far as the top seeds just kind of blowing through. But I don't think you can say that about what we have here. We do have two number one seeds, but I think they were probably the most lightly regarded of those out there. Gonzaga, because they'd never gotten the job done before, and in fairness, they had to go through a fairly smooth path to get there, so I don't know how much they proved. North Carolina, I think a lot of people are looking past them with Kentucky and UCLA. You've got Oregon in there after losing their big man. You got South Carolina in there. I got to tell you this, occasional WFAN contributor Steve Callis was on our preview show for March Madness. the biggest point of contention about the regional finals at Madison Square Garden seemed to be who is going to have more of a home court advantage, Duke, who has always had a pretty good advantage at MSG, or Villanova, who's right down the road. Meanwhile, what you guys had in your backyard played out completely different. South Carolina and Florida, did football season come early?
Oh, my God. You know, it's funny. I kind of had a feeling when the bracket was set up that something funky would happen where we wouldn't get Villanova-Duke. And I did not expect that neither team would even get to Madison Square Garden. But I mean, that was stunning. Honestly, when you look at the Final Four, and I will admit, I went 0-4. I literally have zero Final Four teams in, which, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are like, I had Kentucky winning the whole thing, so I had to sweat it out in the Elite Eight. But South Carolina getting there, I think more than anything, has to just be one of the more stunning Final Four runs we've seen. I know we've seen some crazy upsets over the years, but they were kind of looked at, you know, going into this tournament as, yeah, they're a borderline tournament team, they're not that good, and what they've been able to accomplish, especially the way they destroyed Baylor. I mean, they crushed a pretty good team like Baylor by 20. It wasn't even competitive. It's kind of stunning that they're here, but Gonzaga, you're right. You know, they are a one seed, but they're a one seed in name only, even though they had a nearly flawless season with the exception of the BYU game, and this is probably the best Gonzaga team they've had, specifically defensively. I think we always have just assumed they'll find a way to fall short. And you're right, they had a pretty clear path to get here, but it's still kind of surreal to think that Gonzaga finally, after all these years of expectations, finally were able to break through and get to a Final Four. So it's definitely not what I expected. I don't think many people expected this.
Well, yeah, and you got a game where Gonzaga is playing for a chance to be in the national championship game Saturday, and really they're not the upset story of the game. You kind of figured that they would be, like, oh, can this mid-major finally break through, take another step after making it to the Final Four? But they're playing South Carolina, a school that, again, I think probably points to more than anything else the supremacy of coaching in college basketball. You got a guy like Frank Martin, who's been one of these kind of, you know, pigeonholed as an angry genius over the years, much like Bob Huggins, who was once underneath, probably no coincidence. And the move that he made from Kansas State to South Carolina, a lot of people looked at it like, is that even a lateral move? I mean, you're going from an also-ran team in one power conference to the same thing in another one, and he's gotten the job done there with them. And it's going to be a strange dynamic for Gonzaga to be in this game, because you got to figure that it would, under normal circumstances, be us against the world. We're a number one seed that people don't even believe in because we're a mid-major, because we've constantly fallen short. How are you going to play us against the world when you're playing South Carolina and the world thinks you're going to beat them?
No, I mean, it's in a way, you're a heavy favorite. I mean, when you look at the line, I think the last time I looked at the line, it was 7. So Vegas is basically saying, yeah, we think you're the much better team. You should be in the national championship. And then you got a team like North Carolina that was in the national title game a year ago, facing a pretty good Oregon team who lost one of their key players before the tournament even started. And I think their line's a little bit less than Gonzaga. So you're right. I mean, they're not just favorite. They're kind of a heavy favorite going into this game. So you can't play that underdog card from the small conference. You're supposed to win. And you know what? Let's be honest about this. They lose to South Carolina, I think we're going to look and say, wow, that was a real disaster. They had this clear path towards playing for a national championship. They kind of got a lot of breaks along the way when you look at some of the opponents, you know, going through Xavier, going through Florida. No offense to them, but the road could have certainly been a lot more difficult. And if you can't get past South Carolina, you know, I think if you lose to North Carolina in a national championship game, you say, you know what, hell of a year. They only lost once before this all season long. They got to a title game, you know, good for them. You lose to South Carolina, I don't think we're looking glowingly at this run.
Well, exactly, because if you look at it on paper, they'd be kind of lucky they didn't run into South Carolina in their own bracket. You lose to them here, who's to say that that wouldn't have been a second-round loss like what Duke suffered? So, you know, to say that there would be two teams from Tobacco Road in the Final Four, I think we just assumed it was going to be Duke, North Carolina. We get this strange kind of a thing here where it's Tobacco Road v. the Pacific Northwest in both of the games here. So the chance in the championship game for something really funky here, I mean, you talk about a border battle, not very even on paper, but North Carolina, South Carolina, something that would be long remembered if that was it, or if it's Oregon and Gonzaga, that was something that would kind of have the rest of the country scratching its head, because we still don't kind of tend to pay attention to hoops out there as much as we probably should collectively. as a nation. So assuming that we don't get a third Pacific Northwest v. Tobacco Road matchup for the national championship game here, it leaves open some interesting geographic backyard squabbles on Monday night.
Oh, no doubt. And really, no matter what matchup we get, it's not what anybody could have thought we were going to see. Because, like, even if we get the 2-1s going at it, Gonzaga, North Carolina, it still feels weird to think Gonzaga would be playing for a national title. So it's definitely been a fun tournament, and the people are into it. I mean, the ratings are up big time. So the people have bought into this tournament in a big way.
What's the next question I want to ask you? Being there under the CBS banner, CBS having the tournament, being there in the media capital of the world, essentially, what's your sense on if the carryover is going to be to the Final Four in the national championship game? Because a lot of times you get to this point, and it's carried by sort of the legacy programs and if there's any big-name players that are in there and that kind of thing. And this is a Final Four that's as thin on household name players as I can remember in a long, long time. So you don't have that going. You got Gonzaga being somewhat of an underdog in the public eye, even though being a number one for the reasons we've covered. South Carolina, underdogs a lot of times don't tend to do as well in the rankings. Oregon, they're not necessarily an underdog program. They're just kind of one that's there, I think, in the public eye. And then North Carolina, but they're not going to carry the ratings on their own. So do you think the momentum stays up from the standpoint of your employer here and it's going to be robust ratings throughout here? Or do you think that they might be kind of stubbing their toe a little bit at this point?
I think you would think based on, and the point is fair, when you look at some of the star power, when you look at some of the odd schools that are here like South Carolina, Gonzaga, you know, even Oregon, like you mentioned, we don't pay as much attention to the Pacific Northwest. I can't imagine that the ratings are going to, like, beat last year. And one thing I've noticed, at least being in New York, is that we pay attention to the tournament in the prism of who's going to be the next New York Nick. You know what I mean? So, like, the Kentucky-UCLA game, which, you know, it was very entertaining, but it's not like we got a classic finish of that one, was probably the most interesting game of the tournament to New Yorkers because look at all the potential future Knicks we saw in that game. You know, whether it was Lonzo Ball or it was Malik Monk or it was De'Aaron Fox, who, you know, was the best player on the floor. I don't think we have, you know, that laundry list of future NBA studs. But I think, you know, the game sometimes indicated, like, if South Carolina Gonzaga is a one-possession game in the final 2 minutes, I think sometimes with ratings, you know, people start to pick up the chatter of, oh, this is a pretty good game through Twitter and start to tune in more. So I think if we get good classic games, I don't know if we are. I mean, I'm not, you know, convinced Gonzaga won't just blow out South Carolina. But I think if the games are competitive, the numbers will do well. But I never understood, to be honest with you, why the ratings were so up compared to last year. Like, what about this tournament, this season, makes it that much better or more appealing than a year before? You know, I don't see anything noticeable that would cause that. So who knows, maybe just people in general are more interested in college basketball and not really caring about the matchups.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think we've touched on a couple of things here where we kind of put our finger on that a little bit, not directly. When we opened up by talking about LeBron's team, the Cavaliers, when we were talking a little bit, you were a second ago there about UCLA and Kentucky. This is the biggest draft for pro prospects since the class of 03, I think, easily. I mean, this looks like one of the all-time great draft classes. So you got to think that had a lot to do with it. The hype around so many of these players, the justifiable hype, because a lot of them really look like they could end up being great pros. So that's another interesting thing, too. When you look back at this season, that's probably the biggest story of the season is these guys, and just about all of them one-and-dones, coming in, getting their cup of coffee and moving on. But none of those guys making it to the Final Four. Really interesting. And I go back to the point again about Frank Martin with the South Carolina team here. This is a guy who for a long time people have had their eyes on as being a guy who can really coach above the skill level of the team. And he does it. It's just interesting that it happens in this year, you know, because it shows you that the college game and cohesiveness really still matters. Star power has its place, to be sure, but you look at Villanova last year, you look at South Carolina getting there this year, and in terms of results on the court, it almost seems like that, you know, trumps the star power of all these players in this great draft class.
Yeah, it's funny. We've seen the one-and-done system work with Kentucky a lot, but, yeah, when you look at the four teams that are here, I mean, you got a guy like Sindarius Thornwell, who's put up, you know, great numbers and has been great during this tournament. I don't think he's really projected as much of an NBA player. I think like a second-round pick, but he's a senior. You know, he actually stayed 4 years, which you don't, you know, usually see very often. And even North Carolina, I mean, is a very similar team to a year ago. So, yeah, you've got teams, at least this year, proving that cohesiveness and veterans, guys that aren't just there for a year for a cup of coffee, like you said. And I don't blame them for being there for a cup of coffee. I mean, if you're Lonzo Ball, if you're De'Aaron Fox, why risk injury? Just go to the NBA and make a ton of money. Like, I'll never blame a guy or a kid for wanting to do that. But, yeah, I think this year at least it's been the staying around, having cohesiveness, and I think that's been the reward for the four schools that are there.
I think that's true. And as far as it goes with Thornwell, you're absolutely right. I think NBADraft.net is projecting him as like a mid-second round pick, which feels about right. I mean, you look at a guy like that and you think to yourself, that's a guy I'd like to have on the rotation of my team. Now, that's a guy I'd like to build my team around. So the quintessential college star as opposed to a future NBA star. But again, this is a Final Four. I kind of, just to go full circle on that and bring it around to that again, that this is, I thought that was going to be one of the big stories of the Final Four this year, that it, whether it be Duke, whether it be Kentucky, whether it be UCLA, you expected there to be some schools in there that had some of these stars of the future in the NBA. And again, just kind of fascinating, this year of all years, you really don't have the star power there. I don't know that it necessarily means anything, but at the very least, it's an interesting coincidence. This is the year the Final Four doesn't have a lot of star power when there was so much of it around at so many top programs.
Oh, yeah, and like you said, we may be looking back at, like, that UCLA-Kentucky game years from now, looking at the box score of that game and saying, my God, it was an all-star game. I mean, we very well could be looking at that, especially with, you know, even T.J. Leaf, I think, is considered a first-round pick, and Monk, we mentioned, and Fox. So it's funny, we may look back at that game and say, my God, there were five NBA all-stars on the floor at the same time.
That's a great point. That might be the basketball equivalent of, I want to say maybe it was like the 2011 Alabama-LSU game. I think when you look at the defenses on those squads, they were just loaded with future NFLers. I think you're right that this game is probably going to be the equivalent of that one. And I would have to say, as far as being loaded with talent, how's that for a segue? Relative to last year's WrestleMania, this year's WrestleMania, you don't have the excuse of injuries this year because you've got a lot of guys on both sides pretty much fully healthy. Finn Balor could go probably, except they're choosing apparently to hold him back unless he's going to play some kind of unforeseen role. But in order to do this, in order to take a look at this year's WrestleMania and where it's the most distinct from last year and the discussion that we had about that, let's rewind to last summer, the brand split, because that's one of the big things in company history here, is when you have something like that. Two very distinct brands. I have to say, again, I'm very biased on the subject because I am good friends over the years with the lead writer, SmackDown, Ryan Ward, good Cleveland boy. I have really enjoyed the SmackDown product. I have thought that it has been very good over the course of the year. Raw, much less so in my book, but what do you think about the brand split? Because I would think that even for people that don't like it, you got to give them credit for doing it right this time and not blurring between the shows, because that, to me, is what made it completely meaningless by the end of the last one.
Yeah, and let's see if they keep that up, too, by the way, because it hasn't even been a full year yet. But so far, so good. And I will, and I'm not just kissing up to your buddy, SmackDown is clearly better than Raw. I mean, it's just a more entertaining product. Now, maybe 2 hours versus 3 hours, maybe that's a factor. Maybe it's because SmackDown has The Miz, who is freaking awesome right now, I must say. I think we all agree on that. The only problem is, here's my issue with the brand split. I feel like, and this is now a knock on SmackDown. I'm about to rip SmackDown after I complimented them. Because there's one issue I do have. I feel like the WWE Championship sucks. I feel like they kind of took it and, you know, AJ had a great run with it. They give it to John Cena for 30 seconds. What the hell was the point of that? And then Bray finally wins his title. And now, you know, it's this angle with Orton that I think it's going to be a good match. I just feel like it's not even the top story on SmackDown. Like, I think Shane versus AJ is the bigger story. And I think even to a degree, the Miz, John Cena with the ladies, a bigger thing. And all you need to know is look at the card when they have it on Sunday night. Where is Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt? We know it ain't closing the show. So the one thing Raw And look, I guess this is always going to happen with a brand split. We had this for so long with the world title towards the end not being nearly as big as the WWE title. But, man, I feel like the title, which it is, the Universal title has been around for a few months. The Universal title feels like it's so much more important than the WWE title.
It does. And even though, and again, I understand, and I've defended to some people that haven't liked it, the whole color coding between the brands. I pointed out that, like, what, that's marketing. You're trying to make it distinct. I hate the whole thing. I think the crowd in Brooklyn got it right at SummerSlam when they booed the crap out of that Universal belt. I think it's just garbage having it be red all over. If you want to have it be red, like, in the title area itself, yeah, but it looks, I won't even insult the indies by saying indie-ish by having the red strap part of it. I just loathe that with a passion. But you're right, it feels bigger because it's got Goldberg and it's got Brock Lesnar, who are the big names that they're trying to lure people back with. And again, I'm as big of a SmackDown homer as anybody, so I always choose my words carefully on this because I never want to be critical of the show for my conflicted personal reasons. But I'm not a big Randy Orton guy. It's 2017. I certainly hope that they have some bells and whistles at WrestleMania to lure me into the match more than I am at this point in time. I think that's part of it as well, is having a guy who's been as stale as him in the main event picture on SmackDown. And I had thought, too, tell me what you think about this. I think where they may have gone wrong this year is they can't do what they did at Survivor Series because it would be repetitive. But I felt like they hot-shotted the whole brand versus brand thing. I would have rather seen matches within the brands at Survivor Series. I'd rather see a big team versus team match here because I feel like they felt the pressure to put every title on the show. And now you're probably going to have the Cruiserweight match, which is the one I probably want to see the most on the pre-show. 12 matches, I think, at last count, and who cares about half of them? The women's matches on both sides are just multi-woman matches that aren't really going to mean anything a year after the women stole the show, which we talked about going in last year. So do you think that maybe they should have put a little bit more thought into, again, what they were doing with some of these guys? I mean, I'd rather see Dean Ambrose as one of the lead guys on a SmackDown team than in a throwaway match, even if it's for the IC belt against Baron Corbin. I'll use that as an example. Or the Raw tag team match, which I don't really give two craps about, and I don't think most people do either. So do you think there was a better way if they held off on that concept for WrestleMania?
You know, here's the way I look at it. When they did it at Survivor Series, one of the biggest problems was the brand split was still new. So having a Raw versus SmackDown a few months after they did the brand split was kind of forced. I think if they did it now, I'm not saying I'm a fan of doing a match like that. I don't know. Like, you have to get me interested. I have to be emotionally invested. Sure. I'm not sure how you do it. If they sold it in a way that was appealing, then yeah, I think it could be a good match. And you're right. It would put, you know, entertaining use to a lot of guys that some of the guys don't even have spots. Like, what is Samoa Joe doing at WrestleMania? Do we know? Is he in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal? Is he just going to, like, show up and be in Triple H's corner? Like, does he have a match? The Destroyer? So I think you could have put more guys to better use. But here's the reason why your idea works better than Survivor Series. By right now at WrestleMania, I feel like there is a significant difference between Raw and SmackDown because it's been a lot of time. You know, you watch Raw, you know who Raw guys are, you know who SmackDown guys were. I still felt in November like I wasn't sure because it was still relatively new. So I thought that when they did that, that was the only mistake. You know, when you talk about the brand split and not blurring the lines, they sort of did blur the lines a little bit at Survivor Series by even having that match so soon after splitting the guys up. So if they were going to do a match like that, I would do it at WrestleMania. WrestleMania feels like they have a ton of matches. And the one thing that's a problem with that is certain matches need time. Like, you can't really have a great match in 8 minutes. I mean, it's tough. How do you have a great match in 8 minutes? Now, granted, you have a main event that, we all know, is not going more than 8 minutes. We have a main event that's probably going 4 minutes. Last year's main event, if I'm not mistaken, which sucked, went 27 minutes. So they clearly can take time from the main event and maybe use it in some of these other matches, but that's one of the big problems. Like, you have a couple of matches on this card that could be amazing if you give them time. Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho need 25 minutes. You can't give them only 15 minutes. They need 25 minutes to tell that story that is probably the best build they've had to any of these matches, because they told the story for how many months? They've been building this for 6 months. So I think one of the good things about your idea is it would cut down on the matches, which would allow more time for some of these matches.
That's what I'm thinking, is that less is more, because you're putting a lot of people out there in a lot of matches, but nobody really cares. And that's a thing where it's a shame that the women don't have an equivalent of the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, and I never thought I'd be saying that because it's a fairly useless match, but you could at least declutter the championship matches on both sides. And this is one of the things here, too, and I know that there's reasons for this, and again, as far as, you know, being injury prone and everything like that, and I don't really like what they've done with their character over the last year. Maybe that's why the heel turn's apparently coming. But when we talked about Sasha Banks going into this thing a year ago, as red hot as she was, that to me has been one of the big stories on Raw, is how much they've dropped the ball with her. I really felt like in the draft they should have separated her and Bayley, because I know they were probably thinking they're going to reprise the story with her and Bayley from NXT. But I feel like she's had to sort of take a back seat to Bayley ever since Bayley came up, because, again, she is somebody that obviously they wanted to get behind, hopefully treat as the female Cena as far as having the kid appeal and all of that kind of stuff. But to me, I think that's been one of the big factors on the women's side being kind of blah, is that they kept this pay-per-view streak with Charlotte Flair for so long, and then they just dropped it out of nowhere, and I felt like that victimized Sasha. Like, OMG, it's pay-per-view time. It's time for her to lose again. So that was something that a year ago that we thought really had the chance to be not necessarily a cornerstone for the company, but a very positive thing for them to build off of. A year later, it feels like they've blown a lot of the momentum after those three women, I think, had the best match on the card last year.
Yeah, and it was weird that you just said it, how they have this incredible streak going with Charlotte, who I can't stand, but maybe I'm saying that as a compliment. Maybe she's doing her job then as a heel, that I can't stand her. But why would you build such a long streak and have it end at a pay-per-view that I right now cannot tell you the name of, because I already forgot? Like, it was something that had to do with a road and maybe like a highway or something like that. You got to save that for WrestleMania. And here's the other thing, whether it was Sasha, who fought Charlotte many times this past year, and they were very good matches. Like, they had a great rivalry. They kept us interested, which
they
is...
They were. You're right.
Yeah, which was pretty cool. To me, one-on-one matches at WrestleMania are better than multi-person matches. It reminds me of, I think it was WrestleMania 2000, where literally every match was a multi-person match, and it just doesn't feel big. You know, one-on-one for titles, to me, that feels bigger than three people in a match. Rey Mysterio versus Kurt Angle would have been better than Kurt Angle versus Rey Mysterio versus Randy Orton. That is just my opinion. Maybe I'm crazy. It takes something away from a match. And I think with the women, and they've done a great job with the women. They've got people caring about women's wrestling that normally never cared about women's wrestling. They've given the women time. They've given great matches. They become big parts of storylines. They open up Raw. They close Raw occasionally. Like, that is, when you really think about it, such a huge step. Like, no one could have imagined that. I know there was, like, that one time where Lita and Trish Stratus closed Raw. That was a rarity. That, like, never happened. So, overall, they've done a great job with the women. But I think on both sides, and you mentioned the Raw side, I think both matches, while they may be entertaining, they just don't feel big. Because one-on-one is big. Bayley against Charlotte would have felt big. Schaub, you know, Sasha Banks, maybe even on SmackDown, taking on somebody over there would feel big. But when you have, like, a bunch of women involved, it just, I don't know, it just takes something away from it.
No, I agree, and I think that's where they should have tried to find a way to hold off on Bayley and Charlotte. But that's the problem with having the shallow depth on both sides here, is that you cycle through these matchups a lot earlier, and you did a very good job of pointing out there where I may have perhaps been a little bit harsh on this by not acknowledging that, but yeah, you're right. They've played a much more important role over the last year. It hasn't lived up to yours and my expectations, but that doesn't mean that they haven't made progress. You're absolutely right about that. What's one of the funny things about that is where it's going to come back to bite them, I think, a little bit. You were talking about the main event before. My thought is whatever goes on before the main event is probably going to be very action-packed and everything like that to try to give people their fill before the main event happens so that even if it's a brief match, people come away happy. Normally, you'd put a women's match in between. Back in the day, that was the cool-down match for the crowd. The downside for the company is that the women are no longer the cool-down match. You don't really sort of have that at this point in time, which is really kind of interesting. And it's the good side and the bad side of having to take everything seriously. Although, again, as we've said, with these 12 matches, it's hard to take some of these matches seriously, even if none of them are officially the cool-down.
Yeah, you know what the other thing is? Like, WrestleMania is like 6 hours. I mean, think about it. I know it starts at 7, but it really starts at like 5 because of these pre-show matches. I think they had 2 or 3 pre-show matches last year. Who knows how many they'll have this year. So no matter what the main event is. Now, the main event last year was awful. Nobody wanted to see it. Nobody was excited for it. Roman Reigns against Triple H, and then they slogged their way through 27 minutes, and it was brutal. Even with a main event that we know is going to be a quick burst, by the time we get to 10:45 at night, isn't everybody going to be exhausted in that building? Like, I don't know what you could put ahead of that match that's going to, like, be the perfect setup for the main event, because I think the main event is going to have a tough time having a jacked-up crowd because the crowd's going to be exhausted. It's just such a long event, and I get it. I mean, look, I'm going to be sitting there watching the whole thing. You're going to be sitting there watching the whole thing, but it's also very different when we're on our couch, you know, or we're sitting there on a chair.
Right.
These people are outside at a stadium, and let's think about it. A lot of them are probably getting there even earlier to tailgate, to drink, to God knows what. And by the time this thing ends and we get to that main event, and I think that's one of the bigger differences between now and, let's say, 12 years ago. WrestleMania was never this long. It is now, it's like a festival. It's like an all-day wrestling festival, and at some point you just, you'll wear everybody out. And I think that's, the same thing's going to happen. Like, even if this main event, and this main event is so different in many ways, good and bad, depending on how you want to look at it, than a lot of the main events we've had the last couple of years. But I still think you're going to have a crowd that's going to sound really dead when it starts at 10:40. I could be wrong, but I really think that's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think you're wildly optimistic. I think it's starting at 10:40 because they're probably going to push it as close back to 11 as possible.
That's true. you're right.
They ran way over last year, so it could happen again.
That's very true. You're right about it. At 11:15, the main event starts.
Yeah, like you can't fit it all in 6 hours when, again, I think 3 of the matches are going to be on the pre-show as it's setting up right now. It's interesting, again, the evolution that they've had relative to last year, that now you're seeing it not just with Raw and with SmackDown, but with 205 Live. That is taking steps towards sort of becoming almost like a spinoff territory, if you will. I mean, I know it's being featured on Raw because they got to fill 3 hours somehow, but my guess is you probably get a tag title or a trios one out of there. I've been an enthusiast of 205 Live, unlike a lot of people. And again, I'm looking forward to that match. But they're really, as opposed to a year ago now, trying to cater to, I think, an even broader part of the spectrum, you know, all parts of the spectrum, you might even say. There's going to be guys like me that are looking forward to the Cruiserweight title match. There's going to be all the casuals that they hope are coming back in to see Goldberg against Brock Lesnar in the main event. So The Undertaker usually performs that function as well as far as drawing in the casuals this year against Roman Reigns, as they're hoping to try to build him up yet again. So it's interesting that that's going to be a hallmark, I think, of WrestleManias in the future, and especially as you start getting more international participation. The UK tournament, I watched it in January. I didn't know any of those guys going in. I loved it. You could see that in the years to come. You could see a UK championship match on there potentially. It's always going to be a challenge, I think, from here on in as far as getting in all the guys that they want to get in and making it mean something, because they really seem to want to try to make this day a little bit for everybody out there, basically.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you look at the card, you're right. I mean, the versatility that they have on it is pretty incredible. The problem is at some point, and maybe it's next year, they're going to have to walk away from these part-timers because – the part-timers are just getting older and older. Like, I'm not convinced The Undertaker is even going to be able to move very well. He certainly didn't in the Royal Rumble. Same thing with Bill Goldberg and not as much Brock Lesnar. Brock still puts on a pretty good show as a part-timer. He to me, is the one part-timer. And The Rock, if you ever got him back again, that, like, it works. But eventually, you run out of the nostalgia WCW guys to bring back. You know, they went through Sting. They've gone through Goldberg. So it's going to be interesting when they have to start relying, you know, on their own stars, the ones that they're building. because if they didn't have the part-timers, ask yourself this, what's the main event? I mean, because even Triple H last year is a part-timer, and he's in the main event against Roman Reigns. What's the main event of this year's WrestleMania that they can sell people on if they didn't bring back old Bill Goldberg and have Brock Lesnar as a part-timer? Would it have been Kevin Owens against somebody? Were they really ready to do that? So they've brought in a lot of the, you know, independent wrestling fans because of some of the guys that are on the roster now. But, and while they've had titles, which is great, you know, Kevin Owens is a champion, was a champion. AJ Styles was a champion. Are they ever going to let one of those champions be the guy in main event WrestleMania? Because right now, as they've shown you, and I think we all know the main event is Goldberg-Lesnar. I don't think there's any debate that they're going to go in some other direction. Look what they have main eventing WrestleMania, as well as they've done letting guys that were never typically Vince McMahon guys be champions and have runs, and that's great. At the end of the day, the main event is a Vince McMahon wet dream, Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg.
It is, and it raises the question of, hey, who's the guys that we're going to be tired of seeing in 2037? Because, you know, where are those guys going to come from? Who are they going to build to be on that level subsequently? I mean, Roman Reigns, it seems clear, they think is going to be on that level. And maybe John Cena will be a part-timer until he's 80 and just keep coming back and making his appearances. But, yeah, it makes you wonder where that's going to be subsequently. And as you pointed out before, the way that they booked this card, which, again, I continue to say I think is poor, especially on the Raw side as far as utilization of guys. Like you said, where's Samoa Joe's match? Where's Finn Balor's match? He's healthy. How do you just sit there? I mean, you know, a year ago they would have killed to have either one of those guys up on the roster and plugged into something. Those guys could have been in a semi-main event as thin as they were a year ago from the injuries. But this year, yeah, it's really strange. And in Orlando, of all towns, they're there in the base of NXT, and you got nothing for Finn Balor, you got nothing for Samoa Joe. How does that not figure in at least a little bit?
Yeah, to me it's worse with Samoa Joe than even Finn Balor because – like, Finn, I get it. He was hurt. They want to give him time. Like, I actually went to the house show in White Plains, New York on Sunday night, and he fought. And it was very exciting. He was a part of the six-man tag match that featured Triple H getting a warm-up match. And there was a cool moment where Triple H and Finn Balor stared each other down, and Triple H tried to give him that hand signal, and Finn Balor gave him the Bullet Club hand signal. So it was very, very cool. But I kind of get it with Balor. They want to take the time with it, and he'll probably make a big return the night after Raw. But Samoa Joe's the one that's mind-boggling because he made this big debut with plenty of time to build him towards a match. You know, with Balor, you're not sure if he's ready. And then you don't want to just rush a storyline. I kind of get that. Like, I understand it with Balor. The Joe thing makes no sense. They had plenty of time to think of something with him. And as entertaining as the John Cena-Miz thing has been, and it's been very entertaining, John Cena is one of your biggest stars. He's fighting in a mixed tag match. I mean, that's the reality. As cool as the angle has been, and it has been entertaining, John Cena is not fighting The Undertaker. He's not fighting to break Ric Flair's record. He's not even fighting the Samoa Joe, who's finally in the WWE after all these years. He's in a mixed tag match. So I think they could have utilized Samoa Joe in a better way, and they didn't. And I guess the problem is because I thought, well, I guess you could just stick him in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, but I guess the problem with that is if he's not going to win, that makes him look weak. You want to put him in there only if he's going to win, and you got Braun Strowman in there, and he's probably going to win, and then if Samoa Joe wins and Strowman doesn't win, it makes Strowman look bad. So the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which could have a – think about it. I mean, you could have some pretty good wrestlers in that Battle Royal. I think they're almost afraid to because they want to build somebody up, and it almost makes the guy look bad if he's in it and doesn't win it. And so instead, Samoa Joe is, I guess, holding Triple H's water bottle, I guess.
That is exactly the thinking, I believe, as to why he's not in there, because they don't want to cloud up Braun Strowman's big win in the end there. And it really is kind of mind-boggling. I myself was at a show recently, too, an NXT show, in Warren, Ohio, where they were there. First time I got to see Nakamura live. There's talk that when you look at WrestleMania, the post-Mania here, and again, WrestleMania is just the focal point here, the specter, the fulcrum, if you will, of you start with the Hall of Fame Friday night, NXT Saturday night, and then Raw and SmackDown Monday and Tuesday nights with Mania right in the middle there. There's thought that Nakamura is going to come out and debut on one of those two shows here. assuming that he doesn't win the NXT title back from Bobby Roode, and maybe even if he does, because Kevin Owens worked double duty for a while. So Nakamura, getting to see him live for the first time, it was just, you know, every bit as mind-blowing as I thought it would be. As we look ahead to the future here, that seems to me the most relevant question to ask you when looking at the future, because they got a guy that I just think is absolute gold if they promote him the right way. I've heard the description of the love child of Michael Jackson, Freddie Mercury, and Bruce Lee. Do you have any kind of optimism whatsoever for Nakamura when he makes it to the main roster?
I mean, I kind of do, actually, because they, for the most part, not 100%, for the most part, have really pushed a lot of the guys that have come through NXT. I mean, think about before he got hurt, the push they gave Finn Balor. I mean, Finn Balor got one of the quickest, most electric pushes you'll ever see. And
yes,
I was so curious where they were going to go with it. You know, when he wins that Universal title, what was next? Was he going to get a run all the way until WrestleMania? I don't know. And obviously we'll never know the answer. So I get it. You know, like Taylor Breeze comes in. Tyler Breeze, Taylor Brad. See, I don't even remember his first name anymore because he's become so completely irrelevant. And, yeah, that didn't work, right? And the tag team that makes believe they're in the 1920s, who I love. I love that stupid gimmick. That goes nowhere.
Yeah.
That was a disaster.
Yes.
But for the most part, they've taken a lot of these NXT guys and given them a big push. And it seems like they're starting a NXT-esque faction with Triple H. I don't know if Nakamura fits that as well, you know, especially because SmackDown needs some talent. So I think it would be best if he went to SmackDown. But, you know, based on the way they've pushed a lot of these guys, I think they've done a pretty good job where they've made these guys feel like main eventers immediately. I mean, Finn Balor is the greatest example of it. And even Samoa Joe, despite not having a WrestleMania match, which we're complaining about, it's not like they've booked them to look weak. I mean, they've booked them as a machine. So I have confidence they'll do a lot with them. I think the question is, where do they go? And to me, it's got to be SmackDown.
Well, yeah, I think so. I hope so. Not just for the sake of my good friend writing there, because I know he's done a lot with not having nearly as much to work with, but that can't hold up forever. But I'll go back to this time a year ago when Nakamura debuted there. And again, I don't often pump my friend for any inside details because I don't want to put him in a bad spot, nor do I much on this show comment about stuff we talk about, but this was kind of funny. I'll make an exception. I texted him after he debuted at NXT TakeOver Dallas a year ago, and I said, please don't let Vince make him a sushi chef, and he texted me back. He goes, no, Vince likes him. He knows what he has. So, you know, according to him, Vince is a believer in Nakamura. And I don't think I'm betraying a confidence by saying that. They really treated him as a top-flight guy the last year in NXT. I hope your prediction is right on that and that he continues to get used. I have no doubt whatsoever he goes to SmackDown. He's going to get used well. Raw, we'll see if he gets lost in the shuffle there or not. But it'll be interesting. Looking forward to WrestleMania this weekend. And, again, we can always hope for the best. And it has a low bar to climb as far as being a better show than last year, Evan. I think we agree on that.
Oh my God. I mean, it's funny. WrestleMania 30, arguably the greatest WrestleMania of all time. At least it's up there. I'm not going to say it's number one, but
yes,
it's definitely in that conversation. And then this last year's WrestleMania, it's towards the bottom. I mean, I think you talk about it in the same context as WrestleMania 13, because ask yourself this, would you rather watch Undertaker defeat Psycho Sid with Bret Hart trying to interfere, or Roman Reigns, got to make him look strong, beat Triple H, who fights one time a year? It's kind of close, actually. I may take Undertaker Sid. I may.
Oh, yeah, those are two pretty bad ones, but at least 13 had that five-star match with Bret Hart and Steve Austin. There was nothing to brag about from last year's show as far as the big moments go. Well, as far as a moment goes, Shane O coming off the top of the Hell in the Cell, I'll always pop for that. But that's not a lot to hang 6 hours on. Let's hope that the 6 hours this year have more going for them than that. And it will be interesting to watch. Always fun talking about with you, Evan. Thank you so much for coming on with us, as always.
Anytime, my friend. Enjoy WrestleMania.
You too. Enjoy it, Evan. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Great Evan Roberts, everyone, from WFAN in New York, joining us today. Thank you for being here with us, Evan. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for this mini episode of the FBH Lounge.